I'm Susan Yawkey with VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Coming up, President Obama says a new approach is needed to achieve a Middle East peace. The UN will launch a probe into an alleged Syria chemical weapons attack. The Kurdish rebel leader calls for a ceasefire. And the U.S. reaches out to Iran in a Persian New Year message.
I have no illusions about the difficulty of overcoming decades of mistrust. It will take a serious and sustained effort to resolve the many differences between Iran and the United States.
It's all ahead. U.S. President Barack Obama continues his trip to the Middle East. Wednesday, he met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Shimon Peres. Today, he met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Prime Minister Salam Fayyad. At a news briefing in the West Bank town of Ramallah, President Obama said he came to bear witness to the enduring challenges to peace and security that he said so many Palestinians seek.
The United States is deeply committed to the creation of an independent and sovereign state of Palestine. The Palestinian people deserve an end to occupation and the daily indignities that come with it. Palestinians deserve to move and travel freely and to feel secure in their communities. Like people everywhere, Palestinians deserve a future of hope, that their rights will be respected, that tomorrow will be better than today, and that they can give their children a life of dignity and opportunity. Put simply, Palestinians deserve a state of their own.
President Obama believes there is still time for the so-called two-state solution.
In our discussions today, I reaffirm to President Abbas that the United States remains committed to realizing the vision of two states, which is in the interests of the Palestinian people and also in the national security interests of Israel, the United States, and the world. We seek an independent, viable, and contiguous Palestinian state as the homeland of the Palestinian people, alongside the Jewish state of Israel, two nations enjoying self-determination, security, and peace. And as I've said many times, the only way to achieve that goal is through direct negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians themselves. There is no shortcut to a sustainable solution.
The president said a new approach is needed to achieve a Middle East peace.
If we're going to succeed, part of what we're going to have to do is to get out of some of the formulas and habits that have blocked progress for so long. Both sides are going to have to think anew. Those of us in the United States are going to have to think anew. But I'm confident that we can arrive at our destination to advance the vision of two nations, two neighbors, at peace, Israel and Palestine.
President Obama speaking today in the West Bank town of Ramallah. Michael Fishbach is a noted author and professor at Randolph-Macon College in the U.S. state of Virginia. We asked for his opinion about President Obama's talks with Israeli and Palestinian leaders.
I think there are several reasons why he's doing this, and I think Iran certainly rises to the top of the list. It's well known in his first term that he had a pretty bad relationship with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And I think he's trying to patch that up. I think there are domestic political reasons as well as foreign policy reasons, certainly the Arab Spring, but especially the question of Iran. So I think really what they're doing over there is paving the way for some of that, further discussions about Iran. And he's made it pretty clear, his administration's made it pretty clear, that he has no new initiatives. New peace initiatives as far as Israel and the Palestinians are concerned. So I think there are pretty low expectations about any real diplomatic moves on that front.
You mentioned Iran, and of course it's concern over their nuclear program. Do you think they're discussing what they might do if they can't stop Iran from producing nuclear weapons?
Yes. I mean, the real reasons people have these kind of face-to-face meetings is really to size one another up. There's been a lot of both back channel and even public statements about each country's position as far as Iran, what constitutes a so-called red line. But I think that that's really what's going on here, and I think that was symbolized particularly by the fact that his very first stop in Israel was to a U.S.-funded Patriot anti-missile battery. I think that was purposely designed to show that the United States and Israel are on the same page, if not exactly the same paragraph, as far as what to do with Iran.
The president in the news conference today said that, concerning the Middle East peace process, said that both sides are going to have to think anew. Is it possible for the Palestinians and the Israelis to think anew about the peace process?
Well, frankly, it's hard for me to imagine that. The Palestinians have been fairly vocal, at least as far as diplomatic niceties are concerned, in saying, we keep waiting. What else do we have to offer? We're here living in these cantons separated from one another by Israeli checkpoints. The idea of statehood, while accepted by the global community, is still completely off the table. What else do you want us to do? From the Israeli point of view, of course, Netanyahu has a new coalition now. He has to deal with domestic constraints. They're planning to go ahead with the so-called E1 settlement building. And again, I mean, speaking kindly, Israel can basically do what it wants and has been allowed to do what it wants. And given the bad relationship with President Obama, I think it doesn't expect it's going to receive a lot of pressure from his administration in his second term. So in a sense, Israel really doesn't have any compelling reasons to come up with some fresh new thinking. So I'm not at all optimistic.
The president said it's still possible to have a two-state solution to this issue, but some people feel that it's not even conceivable anymore. Is it too late for that solution?
I'm afraid we're reaching the point where it really is. You know, for many years, the idea of sort of one country, call it what you will, with both Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Jews living in it, was really confined to the margins of sort of far-left thinking. Now it's been increasingly propelled into the realm of reality simply because it's becoming increasingly impossible to envision a contiguous, viable, really able to function Palestinian state in some combination of the West Bank and Gaza. So we're by default left with a couple other options, some kind of one-state solution or essentially a continuation of the status quo, which is frankly how I see the situation moving. However much the Palestinians may not like that, I think just continuing the way things are, whatever kind of a solution you call that, seems to be what we're moving toward.
Some people say that the two sides should share Jerusalem. Do you agree with that?
Well, I personally do, but my own views about politics are perhaps not reflected a lot in the mainstream. But I think that, you know, throughout history, whenever that city in particular or other communities are under the domination of one party or another, it's generally not worked. Certainly to this very hour, the international legal situation of Jerusalem, which was defined in several UN resolutions going back to 1947, is that it should be an open international city. And it's for that reason that the U.S. to this very hour, like most countries on earth, does not have its embassy in Jerusalem, so as not to prejudice a final sort of compromise situation that would leave the city in international hands. Now, historically, after 1948, that didn't happen. But certainly there is a wisdom to the idea of shared, whether it's shared Israeli-Palestinian, shared global, some kind of shared control over the city and its holy shrines. But again, I don't see Israel at all willing to move on that point. So despite my own feelings, I don't think that's going to happen either.
Michael Fishbach, author and professor at Randolph-Macon College. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says the UN will launch a probe into an alleged Syria chemical weapons attack. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad claims that rebels used chemical weapons near Aleppo, while the rebels say Assad forces were responsible. Ban Ki-moon in New York today said the conflict has plunged the nation into extreme chaos with terrible consequences for the Syrian people.
As the situation worsens, the international community's concern about the safety and security of chemical weapons stockpiles, as well as possible use by all parties, has increased. I have repeatedly stated that use of chemical weapons by any side under any circumstances would constitute an outrageous crime. Anyone responsible must be held accountable. I have emphasized the primary responsibility of the Syrian government to ensure the safety and security of any such weapons or materials. I have spoken out on this many times and sent letters to President Assad twice to remind him of this solemn duty.
Ban Ki-moon says Wednesday he received a formal request from the Syrian authorities to investigate the use of chemical weapons in Syria, and he has a mandate to act.
I have decided to conduct a United Nations investigation on the possible use of chemical weapons in Syria. My senior advisors are working on the modalities in close consultation with the relevant bodies, including the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, OPCW, and the World Health Organization, WHO. These include detailed issues such as overall mandate, mission composition, and operational conditions, including safety and security.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says he wants full cooperation from all parties, with investigators having unfettered access in their probe. He added that the use of chemical weapons is a crime against humanity. U.S. officials say they are looking very carefully at the reports that chemical weapons were used in Syria. U.S. Ambassador to Syria, Robert Ford, made the disclosure Wednesday during testimony to a congressional committee, but added the administration has so far seen no evidence to substantiate the claims. At the same hearing, a number of lawmakers on the House Foreign Affairs Committee pressed the ambassador on whether the United States should do more to try to end the Syrian conflict that has killed an estimated 70,000 people. VOA's Cindy Sain has this television report.
Syria's government and rebels accused each other of launching deadly chemical attacks near the northern city of Aleppo Tuesday. If confirmed on either side, it would be the first use of chemical weapons in the two-year conflict. Testifying before the House Foreign Affairs Committee Wednesday, Ambassador to Syria, Robert Ford, said the U.S. is taking the allegations seriously.
So far, we have no evidence to substantiate the reports that chemical weapons were used yesterday. But I want to underline that we are looking very carefully at these reports.
Several lawmakers pointed out that President Barack Obama has said before that if Syria's President Bashar al-Assad used chemical weapons against his own people, he would be crossing a red line. But Ambassador Ford refused to speculate on the consequences if the U.S. does get confirmation that the government used chemical weapons. Ford, who left Syria in 2012, said the U.S. has passed that warning along to Mr. Assad via other countries that have interest in the region. On another issue, the concerns that Islamist extremists are gaining strength among the Syrian opposition, lawmakers differed on the best course of action to follow. Committee Chairman Ed Royce said the Obama administration should take action.
Everything should be considered, but the U.S. could have the greatest impact through training, intelligence, and logistics.
But Royce's fellow Republican, Ileana Ross-Leighton, expressed concern about Islamist extremists taking power after Mr. Assad is gone.
While I respect the opinion of my colleagues, I sincerely do not believe that it is time for the U.S. to arm the rebels. Too many questions remain about who the rebels are and with whom they will swear allegiance.
Ambassador Ford said the Obama administration's goal is to move Syria's government and the opposition coalition to negotiate a political transition to a new governing body, one in which President Assad and his circle play no role. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The imprisoned leader of the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK, has announced a ceasefire and withdrawal of its forces from Turkey. The announcement is part of ongoing efforts to end the nearly three decades conflict between the PKK and the Turkish state. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Öcalan's call for a ceasefire was made in a declaration read out to a massive crowd celebrating Newroz, the start of the Kurdish New Year, and Diyarbakir, the main city in predominantly Kurdish southeast Turkey.
Artık silahlar sussun, fikirler konuşsun noktasına geldik.
This is a time of politics, not guns, he said, adding that all guns should be silenced and the Kurdish armed units should be withdrawn outside Turkey. The ceasefire was widely expected, but the call for the withdrawal of Kurdish rebel forces is being viewed as equally significant. Experts say as many as 3,000 Kurdish rebels are based in Turkey. Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has made their withdrawal a condition for the start of formal talks to end the decades-long conflict. Mr. Erdogan launched his peace efforts last October. Logistically, questions remain how the fighters will withdraw. PKK leaders based in neighbouring northern Iraq have called for guarantees that the withdrawing rebels will not be attacked. A similar withdrawal in 1999, following the capture of Öcalan by Turkish forces, resulted in Turkey's army inflicting heavy casualties on the group. A senior minister, speaking ahead of the declaration, said a full PKK withdrawal could be achieved as early as the end of the year. It remains unclear what concessions the Turkish government is prepared to give. But Kurdish political leaders expect reforms to be part of current parliamentary efforts to write a new constitution. The PKK, along with legal Kurdish groups, are calling for greater cultural rights, local autonomy and amnesty for imprisoned Kurdish rebels and activists, including Öcalan. Senior Kurdish politicians have warned that the road to peace is still difficult and fraught with the danger of provocations. Observers note the issue of trust is still an obstacle, but both sides appear to agree these latest efforts offer the best opportunity for peace since the conflict, which has claimed over 40,000 lives, started nearly 3 decades ago. The PKK is designated as a terrorist organization by both the United States and the European Union. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul, Turkey.
Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei delivered a televised speech to mark the Persian New Year, as most Iranians spent time with friends and family preparing traditional foods for the Nowruz holiday. Edward Uranian reports from our Middle East Bureau in Cairo.
The Ayatollah's annual message to mark the Iranian New Year was interspersed with greetings, wishes for a better future, and angry diatribes against the West. He says that life has its ups and downs, but what is important is that we arrive at the ups. He says that last year was marked by a conflict with Iran's enemies, and that those enemies targeted both its political system and its economy, trying to hinder it with their sanctions. Khamenei went on to urge his countrymen to work harder and invest more. He told them to persevere, stay optimistic, and be enthusiastic. Iran's upcoming June presidential election, he said, will create a roadmap for the country over the next 4 years. U.S. President Barack Obama also spoke to the Iranian people for Nowruz, saying in a tape message released on Monday that the United States would like better relations with Iran despite the differences, including over Tehran's controversial nuclear program.
I have no illusions about the difficulty of overcoming decades of mistrust. It will take a serious and sustained effort to resolve the many differences between Iran and the United States. This includes the world's serious and growing concerns about Iran's nuclear program, which threatens peace and security in the region and beyond.
Tehran says its nuclear program is peaceful, while the West suspects it is working toward development of a nuclear weapon. Mr. Obama said the U.S. is eager to find a diplomatic solution.
As I've said all along, the United States prefers to resolve this matter peacefully, diplomatically. Indeed, if, as Iran's leaders say, their nuclear program is for peaceful purposes, then there is a basis for a practical solution. It's a solution that would give Iran access to peaceful nuclear energy while resolving once and for all the serious questions that the world has about the true nature of the Iranian nuclear program.
Iranians, meanwhile, mark Nowruz with dance, music, and traditional meals to celebrate the start of the new year. Analyst Alex Vatanka of the Middle East Institute says many of Iran's political leaders, including President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, are trying to promote traditional Persian holidays like Nowruz to focus on nationalism rather than the more religious aspects of the country's Islamic Republic.
People such as Ahmadinejad the last few years and people around Ahmadinejad who hope to be in office after June are basically saying, we're not sure if the clergy should be at the center anymore. And the way they challenge the rule of the clergy is by saying, let's put Iran and Iranian nationalism and things like Nowruz first.
Iran's Nowruz holiday lasts for 13 days of family gatherings and outings. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This has been VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Join us Monday through Friday for news from the region and of interest to the region. And for more Mideast coverage, visit our website at MiddleEastVoices.com. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Thanks for joining us.